The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This morning we have George Johnson in the studio. He's the Chief Security Officer for a company called NC4. Good morning, George. How are you?
I'm doing great, John. Thank you.
Boy, that NC4, kind of tough for radio, but it's pretty easy to remember if you remember N like Nancy, NC4, and you can go to nc4.com for more information, right?
That's exactly right, yep.
Great. Before this interview, we were kind of chatting, going back and forth, trying to get George comfortable here in the radio. And, as I explained to him, I said, listen, George, most of my listeners are federal IT professionals. They encounter problems every single day. They're always looking for solutions. They don't know what the best solution is, and maybe this interview will help them with something. And so my goal is that one federal government person, learn something from you that makes their life easy for you. So that's how we're trying to do, is maybe open up the world to what NC4 can do for my listeners. And lo and behold, 3 months from now, they download a white paper. Maybe they call NC4 and you can help them. And that's what we're trying to do here, George. So setting the stage. Make sense?
It makes sense to me. That's great. Thanks.
So some people are scratching their head going, okay, John, well, who is this guy and how did he wind up with NC4? So, George, tell us about your background, kind of an interesting background, I might say, and how you wound up working for NC4, please.
Well, just like a lot of people that wind up in security, you have to have an eclectic background. I started off programming. I set up routers and telecommunication systems and ran operational server farms. So by understanding all the different pieces that go into the internet, and at DARPA I was the webmaster, supporting pulling all their web pages together and doing all that. So I had to work with all the different components, and you start to understand how all the different attacks come at the infrastructure. So that kind of gets you into security. So having a really eclectic background with some programming involved in it helps you get there. And I think a lot of the people that are in the security space right now either have been exposed to most of those or some of them. You can't be a master of all of them, and that's a very difficult thing. So part of what we do at NC4 is to really help leverage the skills of the people that are out there and help them overcome some of the shortfalls that you have in trying to stay as a master of all of those different tools.
In the security community, I've certainly been to a lot of meetings. There's names tossed around. Hey, I studied here. Hey, I studied there. But then someone like George walks in the room and he said, yeah, I was hanging out with these DARPA guys. Whoa. It's like all of a sudden you get a little star in his forehead. Go, whoa, okay. Now make way for him, because that is a good badge. If you're going to start off at some place in security, ain't a bad place to start off, is it?
No, it really is. Now, I have to say, I was a contractor at DARPA. And when I first got there, they gave me a DARPA.mil address. And there's a funny story. I was on one of the IRC chat channels, and for the hardcore tech guys, remember the IRC chat channels, and I was watching a fierce discussion going on, and so I waded in and I put my opinion in there, and all of a sudden the whole conversation shut down because somebody said, hey, somebody from DARPA said that's the right answer. So it just closed down the conversation. So I had to be very careful about that.
Yeah. It's interesting that from your perspective, the start is with the hardware, and I think that's not a bad start. When I had Vint Cerf in the studio here a couple years back, I said, well, when you and Ben Franklin all got together and Al Gore and started putting together the internet here, you just disregarded security, didn't you? He goes, no, we didn't.
Yeah.
And he said he's not going to make any comments about that, but that was at least an initial consideration. So it wasn't something in the early days, and you were there in the early days, that was just dismissed, was it?
No, it wasn't really dismissed, but what they were really trying to do, and they were trying to create a capability. And it really started off more in sort of closed networks. There's some interesting thinking about closed networks, that if a network is closed, that it's secure because you've got boundaries on it. And I know Vint, he's a visionary. He's got unbelievable reach, but he might not have contemplated everywhere this was going to go.
Who could?
And probably certainly never contemplated that IPv4 was still going to be here today, that we wouldn't be at 6 or some future generation that would have more security tied into it, more capability. So you have to make tools that create capability, But it's human nature to exploit capability, right? When checks came out, people started kiting checks and creating bank fraud off of checks. When the internet's here, people are doing the same thing. So they use the technologies to exploit whatever it is that they're going to do.
So you've got an interesting technical background, but you have some academic credentials here too, don't you?
So I literally try to go to school everywhere I go. So I've been to 4 different universities just taking courses. I take courses online all the time. While I was up at Carnegie Mellon after I left DARPA, I taught a couple of classes. I took classes. So I'm an avid lifelong learner.
Georgetown University is included in there. I mean, sure. Carnegie Mellon. You know, you want to rub shoulders with people. It's not a bad group to rub shoulders with, you know. I mean, Carnegie Mellon is really well respected in this industry, CERT. Yeah. Carnegie Mellon, we know all about that. And we'll talk about that in a few minutes. So you've got an interesting, wide-ranging background, everything from, you know, early successes in technology and now keeping up with a lot of technology. So your company, NC4, tell us about that company, where it's based, and how it can help my listeners, please.
Sure, yeah. So NC4 is the National Center for Crisis and Continuity Coordination. That was the name of the original company. It got shortened to NC4 so that people could remember it, because that is a long thing. But it really is a great idea, and it leads right into what our mission statement is. Let me just tell you a little bit about it. So I started a company called the ESP Group, which NC4 bought in 2006. And one of the reasons why I thought it was a great fit was because of NC4's name, the National Center for Crisis and Continuity Coordination. It not only says what we do, it talks a little bit about how we do it, but you know what the more important thing to me is, John? It's why we do it, right? Why do we get up out of bed? And it's to help organizations eliminate, reduce risk for not only the organization, but for the people that are in the organization, okay? And we do it both on the physical side. We do it for law enforcement agencies, and we do it on the cyber side for the government and for private entities. So the mission to me, that why you get up out of bed, is the most important thing. And we try to attract people to our organization that really want to come in and accomplish that mission, not just people that want to come in for a paycheck. So that goes right to our tagline, which is revolutionizing safety and security. And, you know, I pushed that a little bit in the organization and got a little bit of pushback from some folks in sales. They said, revolutionizing, that's such a strong word. What if people object to it? You know, I said, you know, I'd rather have the conversation about how we actually are revolutionizing it than not have the conversation at all, because they think that we're just being an incremental improvement to what they're already doing.
No, that's all there is. I mean, I'm an old geezer. I've seen things over the years. Revolutions are almost like every 3 days in the internet, there's a revolution. I mean, just turn around and look at the way people are paying for things.
Right.
We have companies like Apple trying to move in the payment market. We have people like Snapchat. No, wait a minute. Now, George, now don't jump out of your chair here. So Snapchat's getting involved with financial transactions. Might as well have my next door neighbor dog or something. I mean, someone like you with security background is going to go, no, whoa, all these red flags are going up. Wait a minute. So revolution is almost, okay, it's 3 o'clock, time for the next revolution. Now it's going to come, Apple Watch. Okay, and tomorrow. George just paid $17,000 for an Apple Watch. Okay, George, next. I mean, it's true. I mean, all you have to do is just try to do a graph of what's been happening here in the last 8 years. It's nothing but a revolution, isn't it?
It is, you know, and it's really incredible, you know, and from Apple Watch, you know, somebody hacking in to feel your heartbeat, you know, that just feels a little creepy to me. But, you know, that gets right into the whole Internet of Things. I just read an article actually yesterday. There are these hubs that you can buy for your house that help you with the Internet of Things. And the study indicated that those hubs were so easily compromised. In other words, a hacker could come in and take over that hub and then get into everything in your house. They can open and close your garage for you. They can get access to your Gmail, because a lot of the devices in your house log on to your email systems and do other things and notify you when certain things are happening. So they can get access to your credentials and then go through your emails. So security is really an important thing. And one of the things that I really try to get people to understand is that if you think about security early in the product lifecycle, you can really get it in and have a highly productive, easy to use, and secure application. And if you don't, what you wind up with are problems after problems after problems. And unfortunately, we just haven't learned that lesson yet. So we're now into the Internet of Things, and we're seeing the exact same problems that we saw 15 years ago when people started writing web pages that had a lot of JavaScript and active content. And, you know, it's the same problem all over again. So We need to learn that lesson.
So NC4 focuses on safety and security, works with federal agencies. I think we can all put two and two together. There's some agencies that you work with that we're not going to talk about. We're going to take a break and talk about some of the agencies you do work with, talk more about these things called managed services and securing data, and maybe come up with a case study that someone can actually read and learn something from. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, George Johnson, Chief Security Officer at NC4. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have George Johnson. He is the Chief Security Officer for a company called NC4. Pretty easy to find NC4. I was at your website this morning, and I saw a little case study there, and I downloaded it, and I read it, and it talked about managed services and securely sharing sensitive information. Now, you know, when federal IT professionals hear the word sensitive, they get up out of their chair, and they go, oh, yeah, now you're talking, finally. So let's talk about my listeners here who are interested in sharing information. There's mandates to be transparent, and they have to share information, but they also have to be secure. So this is kind of like a razor's edge here, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's a really interesting space to be in because, you know, I mean, there are a lot of general purpose information sharing platforms. I mean, you could go to Dropbox and move files back and forth with people, but then you have to create all your own relationships. You have to trust that Dropbox has got good security, and they're not going to open up their environment to your audit. So we created this business and really that niche. So we do very high security work. So I was at DARPA. I worked in and around, you know, that kind of a framework. So I borrowed a lot of the really good techniques from the high side, the classified side about protecting data, brought it down and put it on what we call the high threat environment, right? The internet, to create a very protected information sharing environment that meets all the federal initiatives. So we've been doing this since 2000, meeting all the highest compliance marks that we can possibly hit for all of our customers. So one of our customers, US CERT, has been with us since, I think, 2003. We've been working them about 12 years. They have the mission of securing the .gov space and outreach to private industry. So we have a portal system that we're running for them. Now, here's the interesting thing, right? They've got thousands of people there. They've got a lot of different communities that are sharing different kinds of information together. And then we've got other communities like the FSISAC, which has over 9,000 people, okay, on just one environment, and they've got them in small pockets, kind of, you know, cut up, you know, so different kinds of things that they're doing. But now FSISAC and US CERT can share across those environments. And then we've got this other group of defense companies. They're some of the biggest defense companies around. Some of them don't want to be named, but they're some of the biggest ones around. And now they can share with FSISAC and they can share with US CERT. So when you think about this, right, we've got these struggling security professionals, and there's not enough of them out there. There's a real shortage in those jobs. I mean, if you go and you look at USA Gov jobs, you look at any one of the job boards, if you've got cyber background, you can't collect unemployment.
Yeah, they knock on your door.
That's exactly right. So everybody's struggling to get these folks. So what we do is we concentrate our focus of expertise in securing the information so that people can come to our environment, share information with each other, right? In other words, let me give you this great analogy, okay? So in the old days, you got a castle. All right. And everybody would try to defend the castle, but virtually every castle falls because they would try to build the wall around the entire town. So if you're in a big organization, if you try to build your defenses around your entire organization to secure a little bit of sensitive data, it's not going to work very well. Your budget is going to be way too high for security. So what we do is we offer a very secure place to put your sensitive data when you need to share it with other people. And we can set it up literally in minutes. So it doesn't take years to have it built for you, meets all the highest compliance needs, and it's a place where a security professional can go and interact with thousands of other security professionals to leverage their skills. You can go and say, hey, what's the latest attack going on? And people will tell you, and then you can go and look in your own infrastructure to see if it's happening to you.
When you follow the federal government, all kinds of political announcements are made, So you read something called the Digital Accountability and Transparency Act. Hmm. And so I'm sure some of my listeners are going, okay. My boss walked into the office and she said, okay, Georgie boy, now we're going to be transparent with all the stuff you're keeping under. Well, I don't want to open this up to the world. You're going to have to. Yeah. I don't want it. You're going to have to. And so there's this push and pull of, you know, I know a lot of federal IT professionals who are very serious, hardworking, determined. It's almost like a personal thing. I'm responsible for this information and I got to make it transparent. Kind of difficult and real challenge, isn't it?
You know, it is a real challenge. And as security professionals, I think too many of us fall into the trap of trying to get compliance and saying no to the business, right? And even if you're in the government, you're in the business of doing something. And really what security professionals need to do is to figure out how to enable the business. And there's always going to be some risk involved in that. So as security professionals, we have to be willing to talk about risk management and how we're going to deal with this information and not just say no. And, you know, there are a lot of organizations that don't want to share their breach information because they're afraid of letting it go. They think that it's too high a risk.
Dirty laundry. Hey, look at this.
Exactly. But if you don't share, you're like that one wagon heading west all by yourself and all the other wagons are circled up and protecting each other. You don't want to be the one wagon out there, all right?
That doesn't make it.
That's exactly right, right? You really want to be in a community of people sharing and you've got to build trust with other people. And yeah, sometimes there's a risk to opening up a little bit, but the payoff, 10 times the risk.
So if we look at concepts like securely sharing sensitive information, I'll bring up the case study on your website. It's called the IETAR case study. And it, guess what? It deals with something very sensitive. It's called traffic in arms. It's like, this is a hot topic. This is very sensitive. You better be careful about this. You know, you better be careful. Yeah. And it's like, you know, before the show, we were talking about the Washington Nationals. Well, I have an opinion on Bryce Harper, and let's look up his statistics. And you have an opinion on the third baseman, and go back and forth and back and forth. And that's pretty light duty. And all of a sudden, you come to, you know, traffic in arms. No, whoa. Let's put in the cone of silence here. You deal with this stuff. This is also, it notches it up. And so your case study shows how your company has worked with federal organizations to be able to manage this in a discreet and secure fashion.
Right. And so that's exactly the point. And that really gets down to the heart of it. So there's a lot of information sharing platforms that are commodity. But what we do is we have integrated security in from the design concept all the way through execution and continuous monitoring to ensure that we can deal with that highly sensitive information. You know, so if you want information sharing on, you know, the cafeteria menu and sports statistics and other things that are, you know, not tremendously sensitive, there are plenty of places where that can be done. But when you hit those sensitive marks, you don't want to expose your organization. And that's where we really shine for you. So, you know, the ITAR is a great case study. We're doing another one now for human trafficking. We do a whole variety of these. We work with the Office of Personnel Management in supporting clearance processing. So, you know, so many of these different activities across the government that are very sensitive, where we support our customers in enabling their business with security built in.
And that's really the interesting part. Now, let's, when I look at the shows I've done the last 2 years, I look at trends and what's really interest. And obviously what's of interest is mobile, managing mobile securely. Another thing of interest is the cloud. And then, oh, by the way, did I mention big data? Well, I think it's going to be mentioned on this radio station 100 times today. Well, there's just is a whole lot of stuff pouring in. Yeah. And how does a system like yours handle with, okay, we got a little garden hose and everyone's happy. John's happy. The agency's happy. And then the next day, it's not a garden hose of information. It's a fire hose. And then, no. It's five fire hoses. This has got to be a challenge for security managing all this stuff.
Yeah, you know, and it is really incredible the amount of data that builds up. So I just, let me give you a quick story on how that works, right? So we support the FSISAC. Say any one of the big banks that are members of the FSISAC get hit with hundreds of thousands, millions of attacks every day, right? I mean,
can't
it is
count
the,
them, yeah.
The five fire hoses. Some of those organizations have really well-trained analysts, and others are, you know, smaller banks have fewer analysts, you know, and they're not quite as sophisticated and don't have access to the same tools. So the really sophisticated ones are digging through that data, have big data tools, and they, you know, kind of winnow it down and find out what those big attacks are that are going across the financial industries and share that through our platform with all the other players. And sometimes they all hit consensus and find out that there's a much bigger campaign going on to the industry. It's not just a single bank attack. So through that kind of sharing, right? Even if I've got five fire hoses coming at me, if a guy that I know from one of the other banks sends me a note and says, hey, look for this, and I go and look for that one thing in those five fire hoses, and I find it, and I can root out an APT, you know, an advanced persistent threat, or I can find a specific kind of an attack that's going on that I would never have seen on my own, that pays off, literally. I mean, that could prevent, you know, tens of millions of dollar breach, right there on its own. So that pays for the membership in the FSISAC for the next 100 years for that organization all by itself.
Let's take a little break. When we come back, I want to talk more about CERT and DARPA and the folks at Carnegie Mellon and this whole idea of public-private partnership and sharing risk information. And this all gets to be a matter of trust. And I think there's a lot of different topics here that kind of cross over with trust and public. And I may share with other govies. I may share with the intelligence community, but I'm not sharing with John Gilroy. And so this is a lot of, I think, human considerations more than technical considerations. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio is George Johnson, Chief Security Officer at NC4. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, we have George Johnson. He is the Chief Security Officer for a company called NC4. You can just Google him, look at all kinds of information. You go there and you can find odds and ends, white papers. I don't know if you folks have a blog or not. I always ask my guests what blogs they read. Most of my security people are fairly discreet about that. And so if you're going to go on the radio and say, I think we should share information, but not with your radio audience, maybe with a community that's secure. And so I'm not going to ask you what the best blog posts out there for security. Everyone has favorites. You know, one of my favorites is a guy named David Linthicum. He writes about cloud in general and specific about cloud security. So and I have a blog. My blog is called Tech Tuesday Blog. And so I talk about all kinds of silly technical things, talk about my guests and what my hot buttons certainly mean right now. One hot button is this thing of exchanging. You know, I live in a small neighborhood, and one of my neighbors, they had a dryer fire. And they had been out of their house for 2 weeks. So, I mean, a dryer can cost $20,000 worth of damage. And all the neighbors, we all said, you have a dryer there? Oh, guess what? I'm going to clean up my vent. And in the neighborhood, the community, we all said, yeah, I'm going to schedule to clean up my vent as well. And then my neighbor said, you know, when we go camping, we always take dryer vent with us because the lint from the vent, because it really catches fire fast. I went, no, whoa. And so we shared information in the community. Why? Because I wanted everyone in the community to know that this is a problem. You know, you could have a problem, similar type house, and you may want to resolve that or rectify or do something. And so let's take this to the mega level, to the larger. What about security professionals? You know, I mean, they're not going to share my neighbor had a lint fire, but they may share, oh, we had a breach in this, and there's a weakness in this router.
Yeah, that's exactly right. At NC4, we started a thing called the Cyber Threat Exchange to do exactly that. And we've talked a little bit before in some of the previous segments about how we built security into the product, because sharing that breach information, very sensitive to an organization. Huh. We provide the capability for organizations to anonymize their postings so they can push up the information and still remain anonymous, but allow other organizations to bring up their defenses and not suffer those same kind of losses. So, you know, we offer anonymization of sharing of information. We offer, organizations the ability to put their analysts straight together to be able to come up with solutions very, very quickly when they see something that hasn't been identified before. So a lot of capability exists in these cyber threat exchanges that we're putting out. And it supports machine-to-machine level sharing underneath of it. It drives analytics up into the user interfaces. It provides places for the analysts to be able to have ongoing conversations and quickly diagnose new issues. So it is the neighborhood watch, right? So they are sharing, you know, who's breaking in, you know, where, you know, what strange looking cars are in the neighborhood. And that is exactly what they're sharing. And they are accelerating their defenses. And you know what we're really hoping this is going to do? So far, the scale of economics has been on the side of the attackers. We're hoping that by increasing the sharing of the defenders, it's going to change the whole economic landscape. It'll make it more expensive for the attackers to be able to do their job. It'll just change the whole nature of how we do computing on the internet.
One of the current internet memes is this product called Meerkat, and it was kind of flashed his head and went back underground quickly. And I kept thinking when my kids were small, I'd take them to the zoo, and they'd look at those little animals that would come up out of the ground. And they were like team players. They all were like 10 of them. They were looking for everything. As soon as there's danger, everyone knew, and they went back down. It's like, okay, we want you to be like one of those little prairie dogs that kind of, I don't want to be a prairie dog. No, but a prairie dog alone is not going to, but if you have 20 prairie dogs, they're going to see the threat coming. And all of a sudden, I think they have trust. And I think this is what, you know, we talked about this in the break about the speed of trust and what's trust and who do you trust. And there's a TV show many years ago, Who Do You Trust? And we're playing that game right now, aren't we?
We are. You know, we really are. So, and I gave a talk about this at the Forum of Incident Response and Security Teams last year, and I'll be doing the same thing again this year. It's an international group. Governments have their CERT teams that go to it. CERT is the Computer Emergency Response Teams. Large multinationals send their teams to it. So it is probably the preeminent group where we have these discussions. But I also try to break out away from security professionals to talk about this too, which is why I think your audience is so important in this area. So when you talk about trust, you have to build up trust, and it starts a few different ways. So at the FS-ISAC, for instance, the companies wanted to be able to post anonymously and then have all that data aggregated and then be able to get some value back out of it. So trust started through sort of anonymous submissions. In the defense industries, they got a small group of people, really forward-leaning people, together across companies sharing very sensitive data. So it was highly attributable, but it was a very small group, and then they started expanding. So there's a couple of different ways that trust can grow, and we've watched those models through the course of the last 15 years, and we've built our tools to enable those models and support people in building their trust and scaling their communities to really get the value.
The exact opposite of trust is something called Twitter, and there's people have Twitter feeds, and you can follow this company at NC4 Worldwide. You can follow me at Ray Gilray. And you'll see silly pictures. I just took a picture of George. Maybe I'll post that picture and people can say, oh, so that's what a security professional looks like. Kind of interesting. People, they listen. They go, that's all kind of a fascinating question. So we just talked about podcasts earlier. We talked about Twitter. Tell me more about this trust and what's the framework for this discussion? And was it well received? It was well received because you got invited back. So that's the rule of thumb, isn't it?
Yeah, that's always the rule of thumb, right? If they didn't like you, you're not coming back. the good news there is we started off, I wanted to give a presentation, and in this group, you can't go and do a vendor pitch. And that's always a challenge. You know, when you've got a good solution and you want to tell people about it, it's not a vendor pitch. So we had a lot of success. We had US CERT, but of course, they're the US government, so they usually don't stand up on the stage and talk too much about what they do. But we also had the FS-ISAC, so they stood up on stage and they were telling people how they were using our tools and how it supported building their trust models and scaling up. And since that talk, they've literally been putting on, 20, 30 new banks and financial institutions every week. I mean, they are just growing like crazy. And, you know, they're really one of the preeminent information sharing environments in terms of their scale.
Well, do they have a website or where would they go to get more information on this group?
Yeah. I mean, if you just search up the FS-ISAC, you know, you'll find out a lot about it. They've been in the news and congressional.
FSISAC.
Yeah, FS-ISAC.
Okay.
And then this year coming up, we're also going to have the Defense Industrial Base information sharing environment standing on stage as well, talking about how they're using the tool, how they're going to be sharing information with the FS-ISAC. There was a really good one. We went to one of the analyst conferences, and the defense group said, we saw this kind of an attack and a campaign against all of us. 6 months later, those same attackers used the same tools against different organizations in the retail industry. Okay. You know, I mean, they had some informal discussions with folks over there. So it's very clear that the same attackers use the same tools across major industries.
Well, if they're not talking to each other, hey, good for us.
Right.
That's how bad guys think.
And that's so the economy of scale is on the attacker's side. So because we are helping people with tools on our platform and helping them to share across platforms, we call it cloud sharing, right? So we got a cloud of people in the financial institutions called the FS-ISAC, another cloud in the defense industry, another cloud for Gov. And we help them share between those so that they can defend and stop those kinds of attacks and change the economy back to the defender side.
I'm going to a wedding this weekend in Greensboro, North Carolina. And, I'm considered to be inside the Beltway something or other raise your eyebrows when they meet me. Is there an advantage to CERT being based in Pittsburgh?
You know, Pittsburgh is really a fantastic town. I'm a little bit long on the statistics, but when I left there in 2000, Pittsburgh was the fifth largest city in the country for per capita research and development dollars. With UPMC there, with Carnegie Mellon there, with all the other universities, it was like a big university town. And it was really fantastic. It attracts a lot of...
I know retired people who are moving there. I know hipsters that are moving there because they can buy a house.
Like,
guess what? There's pretty good schools there. And there's a lot of technology information. They have some finance there. It's made the shift. But I always think that just the fact that you're not listening to Federal News Radio or not reading the Washington Post or thinking about what's going on, you get a different perspective on attack vectors. You have to.
Oh, absolutely. You know, you've got to take a global perspective on this. And being outside of the Beltway, I think, really helps. Being inside the Beltway helps. Being around the world helps. That's why participating in groups like FIRST that are hugely international is a great place to gain insight.
And my insight was, I just told people not to listen to Federal News Radio. I'm going to get in the hook for that. They're going to pull the show. But I'm just saying, theoretically, if you want to get outside of an environment.
Yeah.
But here's the podcast. Here's the Twitter feed. I'm getting in trouble for that one. Let's take a little break. We can come back, talk more about maybe CERT, DARPA, and some places that maybe some of our listeners can get more information. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In the studio, we have George Johnson, Chief Security Officer at NC4. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In the studio, we have George Johnson. He's the Chief Security Officer for a company called N, as in Nancy, NC4. I'm sure you could Google that and find out anything you want. If you Google podcast Federal Tech Talk, you get this podcast, and you can subscribe to it there. And some people are actually on Twitter. My Twitter handle is at Ray Gilray. I think you folks are at NC4 Worldwide. Is that right, George?
Yeah, that's right.
So if you want to follow, and this is not for discussing sensitive information. It's for silly things and conferences. No, by the way, George will be speaking at this conference. That's a good topic for Twitter, something really light and informal, or here's a silly story, and let's not get too serious about this Twitter thing. It's just a kind of a light way to communicate informal information, but there's serious ways to communicate, and we've been spending the last 40 minutes talking about some rather heavy topics about, you know, trust and security and managed services, and we even mentioned the sensitive topic of traffic and arms. I want to pull this conversation up a little bit lighter and mobile madness. And boy, everyone's got a smartphone. 800 million smartphones were sold last year. There's IoT. People are putting chips in their shoe connected to their smartphone. Blogs are going crazy. Any insight, any kind of new products your company has as far as managing mobile devices?
Yeah, actually, this last year we brought out a product that leverages a lot of the technology that we built for one of our products called Risk Center. So in Risk Center, for the last 10 years, we've been collecting all the adverse physical events that go on all over the world, putting it into a database, and that supports our customers in finding out what's going on around their facilities and around their travelers that are moving around the world. So we wanted to leverage that data and bring it down to a handheld. So we put out an app. You can get it for your Apple or your Android phone. And what it does basically is, you know, if you work for a big company, you're traveling around, and your company can draw a fence that says, oh, you know, you shouldn't go here and you shouldn't go here. So if you're traveling along and all of a sudden you hit that area, your security team can be informed if you have it turned on for that kind of tracking. What most people do is they have it turned off for that kind of tracking. But if there's trouble, they can just push the red button and that will notify their security teams and tell them that they've got a traveler that's in trouble, no matter where they are. As long as they've got some kind of connectivity from that cell phone, if they push that button, we can get the alert. And we partner with companies that will actually do physical extractions. So we can provide sort of a soup to nuts on helping you take care of your facilities, helping you take care of your travelers, identifying issues that are happening all over the world. And you know, we just got a ton of case studies up on our website. If you go to nc4.com, this is called Risk Center, and the product that goes on your phone is called ActivePoint. Really great product.
You know, if you learn anything from Steve Jobs, is not KISS, but M, make it simple, stupid. Make it simple, easy. These are human beings here. This is not the only thing they have to worry about. There's 10,000 things going on. They're getting bombarded with advertisement. And so if you can make it something really simple, it's better. And I have 10 simple questions for you, George, because people are listening going, this guy's been around. He's hung out with some smart people. He's got some education. And from a security perspective, what kind of a card-carrying nerd is he? So I'm going to ask you these 10 questions that my listeners are thinking and see what kind of answers you have. And I will go through my basement and run through my Apple II or whatever I have down there, maybe my Trash 80, my Radio Shack Trash 80, and find out if, in fact, your card-carrying nerd. First question, do you have an Instagram account?
I don't have an Instagram account. Yeah, I know. Struck one, right?
How many cell phones have you purchased for yourself in the last year?
I purchased two. I got a Windows phone and an Android phone.
Ooh, belt and suspenders. That's interesting. That's right. Do you have a personal Twitter feed?
I have a Twitter account, but as a chief security officer, I don't tweet.
You know, the security people, it's tough questions.
I've got the business of keeping secrets, not sending them out. So,
okay, here's a question for you. Mercat or Periscope, do you use either or plan on using either one of those things?
You know, I don't, I got to say. So.
Security guy, you're answering the right questions from a security perspective.
It's tough from the security space, you know.
What kind of smartphone do you have?
Right now, I've got the Android, the M8 One.
Android for security, that's interesting.
I like to play around with rooting it and putting in different operating systems that are more
big
secure.
Big nerd points there.
All right, there
What's the most popular app on that phone? Most popular thing in the last 30 days?
In the last 30 days, I have to say, I downloaded a game. It's called 2048, and I love games. I study game theory. I read a lot of books on game theory, so I love to play games and solve puzzles.
We'll be informing your boss on this. And we break into your house tonight. How many tablet devices do we see floating around there?
You'll find two Apple tablets.
Okay. And when was your most recent post in a social media network?
So I posted yesterday on LinkedIn.
Okay.
So I am relatively active on LinkedIn. I actually run a group there called Server Farm Professionals.
Do you have a mobile fitness device?
I don't do that.
And the last book you read, was it electronic or paper?
It was actually a combination. The first half was published as a free PDF, and I loved the book so much I bought 8 copies and spread them around the company.
Wow. What's the name of this book?
It was called The Phoenix Project. It was written by 3 guys, Gene Kim, Kevin Baer, and George Spafford. And it's all about the DevOps revolution.
Yeah, we know his roommate. We had him on the air 2 weeks ago. Yeah,
fantastic.
DevOps. That's really getting a very popular book because it can be applied to many different areas. The whole concept of DevOps is ostensibly information technology, but you could probably use that maybe with auto mechanics. You could probably, you know, I have a plumber at my house this morning. Maybe his company can use something like that. So
sure. It's
not too bad actually at all. Kind of interesting. I'll run this through my computer in basement and see if you're a card-carrying nerd or not. I don't know if you want to be or not. So the question for you, you've seen everything from the ground up. I mean, you've pulled cable. You've seen hard drives fail in servers. You've probably seen little fires in servers. I've gone into server room and gone deaf. I've seen the temperature go up. I mean, you've seen all these things. Where's this all heading in the next 5 or 6 years? What about security? Think we're going to whoop them? Are we going to get whooped? Or where's this all heading, George?
You know, it's just going to be a constant battle, right? So this is human nature. Humans have been exploiting each other for a long time. And in the old physical space, it just took a long time to do it. Now they can do it at the speed of light, and they can do it asymmetrically. So one bad guy can attack a lot of people. They can do credit card fraud. They can steal bank accounts on a scale never before imaginable. So we have to figure out how to do defense a little bit differently. You know, you can't stand alone. A company just can't hire enough security guards to prevent all attacks from all over the world all the time. So, you know, the security challenge is going to be with us into the foreseeable future. There's no silver bullet solution to stop bad people from figuring out really new and interesting ways of breaking into systems and doing nefarious things.
You know, if you study the history of Europe, you can't help but go to Spain, and you go to Castile in Spain, and Castile means castle. And for many, many years, castles were a great way to defend yourself. And I mean, look, I've been to these castles. These are really thick stone walls, 10, 15 feet thick. They'll withstand everything. And no one uses them anymore because guess what? People found ways around them. And it's not by building bigger castles. It's by changing technology. And I think what we have now is we have maybe a reliance on, well, this is how we've always done it. And these firewalls are great. And then all of a sudden, Target says, they got in through our air conditioning system.
Right. Yeah.
Well, that's the guy in the castle. Who would expect that? No security. And so you have to be open-minded to different attacks and different threats. And I think it's got to be done almost in a social situation because, hey, you know, we're all kind of grouped around one mean of kind of more or less kind of 100 IQ. There's not a whole lot of smart people out there. But all of us together share stuff. Maybe we can make some progress.
And, you know, that's really exactly right. And, you know, I'm a fan of studying European history, too. And I've gone up, there's a road in Germany called the Romantische Straße, which has all the walled cities. And when you look at a walled city, all the peasants lived outside. And then there was the castle that protected the king and his jewels. And if you think about that in terms of protecting data, That's kind of where we should be, right? So what people have tried to do in the past have built the walls around the whole organization.
Firewall itself,
around
there's
everything
the
everything and everybody
there's
and
the
trying
term.
To protect everything like it's all the same,
right,
like
exactly.
It all has the same
there's
value.
There's the parallel.
And that's too hard to do. So you've got to figure out how to protect the data, not the entire corporate network all at the same time, at the same level. And so that's the risk management that we've got to do. And as security professionals, we have to add value to the company by helping that, not just by saying no all the time.
100 years ago, there's a war in Europe that started August 1914. Uh-huh. And they had this thing called a Maginot Line that they decided to build after that. Yeah. Well, guess what? That was a great wall, wasn't it? It was a great wall, except yeah. They forgot one little thing. They didn't take it all over the ocean, did they? It was like, right. Hey, pretty good idea. They spent thousands on that yeah. wall. Maybe it was a firewall. Huh?
Right.
There's a parallel there, isn't there?
There is, you know, and, you know, kind of back to that castle analogy, every single castle I've ever been in has got two or three hidden doors out of the back. You know what I'm talking about? These are the back doors that the bad guys eventually find, all right, and then they break in. So, yeah, you got to be really careful about, you know, building big walls because there's always a hidden back door in there someplace.
So any security professional says, yeah, we're on top of things. Yeah, we got a great firewall and it's impregnable and it's never going to get through and we've tested and tested and tested. And meanwhile, they're taking the jewels out through the back door and you're yeah. protecting the Maginot Line or whatever wall to your castle. So it's an interesting trend and we'll just have to see where it ends up in the next few years. We're going to have to end our interview here. We're running out of time. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, George Johnson, Chief Security Officer for NC4. Thank you, George.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 9, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.